Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Rife. And on the program today, we have Ben Temple, Business Development Manager, and Darren Sawyer, Director of Development from Wells McClellan, joining us here. There were obviously, for those listeners who may not know, Wells McClellan is a large construction company that does everything from developing all the way to TI, pretty much everything under the commercial banner, as you'll hear Darren say on the podcast there. But we get to dive in really on what they're seeing on the construction front. And construction in commercial real estate is always a really good indicator. What projects are in the queue? Who's building what? Who's building where? Because you will find as the development side of our industry has slowed down, the people who are building may have changed, as they alluded to in the podcast there. So always a really, really good insight having construction companies come on and join us so we can find out who's building what, where. And obviously Wells McClellan, that did have a very large portfolio probably of industrial type developments over the years, to hear how the client has changed now versus maybe a couple of years ago is a really, really good insight, maybe on where the direction that things are going. So without further ado, guys, let's get to our interview today with Ben Temple and Darren Sawyer of Wells McClellan.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Zentera has done it again. Recently named Multifamily Home Builder of the Year by the Home Builders Association of Vancouver and the Canadian Home Builders Association of BC. Zentera continues to move forward on new projects. And their latest, Butte, a new condo community in West Clayton, is now selling. With construction already underway, buyers can purchase with confidence knowing that the project is moving forward.
Butte offers 1, 2, and 3-bedroom condos located just 3 blocks to the future SkyTrain Adam. These condos come with tons of inclusions like gas ranges, air conditioning, and designer-selected finishes. Residents will have access to the rooftop patio, fitness center, on-site daycare, co-working space, games room, and tons of outdoor space with 3 playgrounds. Estimated completion is summer 2028.
The best deals are happening now. Visit Zentera's home store in South Surrey to get all the details or check out the floor plans at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
All right, we're here today with Ben Temple, Business Development Manager, and Darren Sawyer, Director of Development at Wells McClellan. Guys, how are you guys doing today?
Good, thanks, Corey. Doing great.
Amazing.
Good, Corey. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. I'm excited for this episode here because you guys are on the front lines of industrial development. So I'm really interested to hear what you guys are seeing. But before we get into that, do you guys mind telling us a little bit more about yourselves and Wells McClellan?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, thanks again, Corey, for having us. We really appreciate it. And it's great to connect with you and your followers. Wells McClellan started in 1971, so we've been around for a while now. Once upon a time, you know, the firm was founded on the basis of design build, where there were architects, engineers actually on staff and in the payroll. We obviously have kind of moved on from that, but that design build mentality is still in our blood. We specialize in industrial, commercial, and institutional construction, so essentially everything but residential. We've been asked to look at residential in the past, but we're kind of staying in our lane and stay focused in those verticals. We're based here in Richmond, but we've gone as far as Vaughan, Ontario to build specialized projects for repeat clients. And we're active in some tertiary markets like Vancouver Island, Kelowna, and we've also got some projects going on in Alberta as well. Work on everything from automotive retail, which is an interesting busy segment, which we're happy to chat about today, to, you know, large format distribution, to multi-story, you know, pretty high-end LEED Gold custom-built office buildings, everything from, you know, multinational pension funds down to small mom and pops who never built a building before, and everything in between. That's a little elevator pitch about Wales McClellan.
Well, guys, I appreciate you taking the time to join us here. And kind of to you guys alluded to, deep roots in development on the commercial standpoint. I'm really curious, just we'll kick things off here and I'll give you guys the runway to take this any which way direction you want to go. Development as a whole has probably been a more challenged side of the commercial real estate business, call it past couple years. What are you guys seeing now? Are you guys seeing more optimism on the development side? Clients are calling, phones are ringing. What are you guys seeing on the construction side of things right now? We'll say March, end of Q1, 2026.
Yeah, well, I think what's going on now versus, we're actually off to a pretty good start. Like in terms of, if you look at our estimating pipeline, we're about 2.5 months into the year. And I think we have about, you know, 40 projects that we've estimated so far or in the pipeline, which is a really good start, I actually think, relative to 2025. So if you use that as a proxy, I think that's, there's more optimism. I think when you look at, there's projects that we've had that are basically shovel ready, and maybe they may strata or leasing on the industrial side, and we're waiting for some leasing activity for those projects to go ahead. But at the same time, there's new opportunities emerging. Like self storage is a really busy space for us. Daycares, those are probably, you know, data centers have been, there's been a lot of talk of data centers and a lot of people exploring data centers in British Columbia. But as of right now, like a lot of those projects are challenged when it comes to just getting power, and you know, there's a lot of alternatives when it comes to, like, we talk about Alberta, Quebec, Ontario to build data centers. So there's people exploring those opportunities. So I think that's where the optimism is.
Yeah, and I would add to that, just like if you kind of look at, like, because we were so active in the industrial and commercial space, if you kind of look at our current volume, like Corey, like what are we actually building, right? And it's,
yeah,
if I look at the 20 odd active, like, boots on the ground construction projects right now, it's all users except for, I think we've got two spec industrial projects in construction, one's, you know, a conventional 45,000 square foot spec for lease, kind of mid bay size, and then the other is the yard project in Vancouver that we're finishing up. That's a seven story quote unquote stacked industrial that's for lease. The rest is all user driven, and like Ben said, you know, that's spread out over, like, we classify self storage as user, and then we've got, you know, essentially a lot of build to suits where we've kind of run through hiring the design team, coordinating the design, applying for the permits, obtaining the building permits, and now we're in construction. So these build to suits, as everybody knows, can take, you know, quite a while to get through that process and into construction. So we feel fortunate that we do have the users we have that are keeping our construction guys and our trades busy now. And a lot of TIs. We had several shell buildings that we'd completed in 2025 or even at the end of 2024 that, you know, sat empty for a period of time just with the uncertainty in the leasing market. You know, leasing volumes, leasing activities, thankfully picked up in some of these larger formats. You know, everyone's, you know, talks about 50,000 square feet. And now, you know, we're completing, you know, a series of TIs in these shell buildings that have kind of sat vacant for a while. So there's certainly, you know, a lot of positives there. But on the spec construction side, like Ben said, a lot of our upcoming projects we've got quite a few buildings, quite a few square footage spread over quite a few municipalities that are essentially building permit ready, that, you know, we need some pre-leasing or some pre-sales to then, you know, have the clients have confidence to push the button on the construction side. That's kind of what we're seeing out there. And what we're trying to do is, we're like, these sites are, some of these industrial sites are so complicated. with boundary conditions or offsite servicing or site prep. You know, we're trying to work with our clients to get creative and advise them on costs and schedule and constructability to kind of move them further down the process. So they are much more market ready sites. So when the market does turn, you know, they can get to market sooner with new product.
I would be really interested to hear, because obviously development on the strata side of things was a booming part of the industrial market for so long. Interesting to hear so much of the work now is owner user. But maybe if we go back a few years, how much of a broad percentage was owner user to developer, as in like a merchant developer, versus now it sounds like it's all owner user on the build side?
I mean, it might have been, you know, 70-30, 80-20. And now that's completely reversed.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's probably where we're at.
Now, you mentioned, too, about these projects, these owner-user. I'm really curious, is there any markets right now that you feel like you're seeing more activity from? Maybe whether it be on the TI side or on the spec build side for the owner-user. Is there any one market that you see like more activities coming out of?
I think it's probably We're building the exchange products in Abbotsford for Quadreal and Hungerford. And, you know, those buildings we built building one and two and those sat vacant for a little while. And now they're nearly fully leased up. We just started building 11 late last year, which is a 80,000 square foot built to suit. And, you know, so I feel like there's more interest and there seems to be some momentum there. Yeah, that's probably the thing that comes to mind.
Ed mentioned self-storage, right, Corey? So that's, you know, these are technically on industrial sites.
Yeah, good point.
Where, you know, we've got some small bay or mid bay on the ground floor that's going to be, you know, kind of a wholesale or even quasi-retail function. And then, you know, these are large projects, right? These are five, six, seven stories tall, you know, 180,000 square feet. And that's not new to our market. But, you know, if you talk to the self-storage experts, you know, there still is demand for these buildings. And with this scale, it takes a while to get the development permit, the building permit, and then, you know, your vertical construction phase. You know, it takes a while and certainly some wherewithal to bring these projects to market. So we're talking to a lot of groups right now about self-storage, and we've got, you know, two active in pre-construction. We're actually starting to demo a building on one of those sites, apply for the building permits and start these, you know, in the summer.
I'd be interested, and you guys may or may not have this question, in a market like self-storage, obviously you're not the first sort of design build firm that has mentioned that is something that's now on a lot more radars than it was before. Does a market like that become at risk of oversaturation if too much of this product gets built too quickly? Referring to self-storage.
I think we're the construction experts really, right? Not really the market experts, but from what we see, I think that it's tied to the residential market, self-storage. So, you know, people are living in smaller units and they have more stuff to store. So really what you're seeing in the urban markets, at least, I think it's really residential has been a catalyst for it and people moving around into different locations in urban areas, so they have more stuff. And then really, when you look at the United States and you look at Canada and like just the self-storage per capita and per person relative to the US, like we're like half of what they're using. So I think a lot of the operators feel like there's a lot of upside. I think it's also really location specific. So like a facility in Richmond isn't going to be competing with a facility in Coquitlam, right? So
yeah, good point.
I think that the operators know that. And then if you have a good site that is like, you know, good exposure, fits the zoning, you can bring additional density to it. Maybe with multi-story, like, you know, if you can get a good deal on the land and a performance, then it works, right? So well, there's groups that we do talk to, like self-storage operators from time to time. And, you know, if we're working on some feasibility stuff, like we can make some introductions to help people understand their sites and understand if it's a good self-storage site and to see if it can compete in the market.
I'd be interested to get your take, or I guess you guys are obviously one of those better than probably anyone. There's been a lot of talk about construction costs over time, call it the last 4 or 5, 6 years, where it feels like they've really scaled up. How is construction pricing now with regards to it? Is there any relief in anything that's sort of that's making it maybe slightly more affordable for developers to build product, where construction costs still, you know, fairly high and potentially could be higher?
Well, I think, Corey, we get asked this a lot, right? It's just people are constantly
updating, I can imagine
updating their performance, you know, maybe we priced something 6 months ago, 12 months ago, or even longer. It's like, okay, you know, like refresh, where are we at, right? And it's indicative of the market, obviously, and the cycle we're in. So, you know, the short answer is yes, you know, construction costs are down, but, you know, from what point in time to today, right? And
yeah, understandable.
The savings is coming from really, you know, trades trying to fill their book of business and looking ahead and adjusting their rates and really just getting hungrier and leaner. It's not really driven by, you know, a drop in material costs. If anything, you know, materials are staying flat or even there's grumblings about increases coming down the pipe for certain, you know, certain materials. Like we're just so heavily tied to the U.S. that, you know, what's going on in their market, and it's obviously very nuanced, you know, affects us, right? But if you kind of like this whole, you know, we're 5 to 8% off the peak, we do believe that. And that's, you know, we're constantly pricing, training, tendering. And if we kind of look back through our historics, we are certainly, I'd say, at a minimum 5 to 8%, if not more, off the peak. And, you know, there's room to kind of negotiate. If you're prepared to start your construction project, that's kind of the big if, right? If you've got a shovel in the ground ready project, you are seeing very, very good trade pricing that we haven't seen in a number of years. But I mean, just to give you kind of some anecdotal examples, right? Like, you know, a 1600 amp distribution on, you know, one of these shell industrial buildings or even a build to suit for that matter, you know, these used to cost $35,000 to $40,000, you know, a couple of years ago. It costs $90,000 now. So, you know, that key piece of electrical equipment's doubled. You know, steel, you know, up until last November was kind of down 15%, you know, structural steel. You know, when the quota system came in December to sort of protect domestic providers, you know, that shot up by 25%. And that's really not going away. And these are broad percentages, obviously, and it's very specific to what size of beams and columns are you rolling out, and where are these coming from? Are they coming from Japan or South Korea? Because we're trying to avoid buying anything from the U.S. So it's a very project specific cost makeup on these. Like, these projects are one of one. Yes, you know, you can take historic data and apply it to, you know, another project, but we always advise, you know, we want to take the time to cost your specific project out where it's at in today's dollars. And that's something we're constantly doing and trying to get creative on how to lower these costs. And if we can shave 5, 10, 50% off the hard costs, you know, it's a huge win. But, you know, is that moving the needle in the pro forma enough to, you know, go on spec, or, you know, is the market, you know, are the market fundamentals going to be there, or the users going to be there to absorb that product, right? Like, we do our best to drive the hard costs down, but is it really making that project that much more viable? You know, I don't know.
I got a question here, and this is one thing that we preach to clients on the brokerage side all the time, is engaging the right groups at the right time. And with that, from a developer standpoint, would be to get ideally probably a design build firm involved right at the very start during due diligence and all of that stuff to see if the site makes sense for what a client's looking to do, but also on the tenant standpoint or owner-occupier standpoint for that matter, is getting costs involved. How can maybe a tenant, and then maybe a second question, a developer, get you guys involved early stages and the benefit that comes with having Wells McLellan engaged really, really early on before, you know, too far down the road and costs maybe are higher than expected?
Well, it's a great point. I mean, like, short of, you know, creating a super competitive trade pricing environment to drive those savings, I really believe most of the value is generated during the design side. And that's making sure you have the right design team for that specific project. Like, before we would even, you know, phone our architectural partners, we would sit down with you know, the broker and the client and say, okay, what are your objectives? What are you trying to achieve? And then we would match the consultant team to exactly what you're doing. There's just too many times where we've got, you know, the wrong consultant potentially, you know, designing not the right project. And we try to catch as much as we can, you know, do we need this piece of equipment? No. You know, why are we doing it this way? Why don't we do it this way? And, you know, we're picking up hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars during this design stage that doesn't need to get put on the drawings, baked into the paper, and then, you know, baked into the project, right? That's that value creation versus, you know, trying to value engineer stuff, you know, when the design's too far along. That's really where we see a lot of the benefits. And, you know, Ben can talk about kind of how we do that specifically for groups, but that's really where we think we add the most to for our clients in these projects, is picking that stuff up before it goes too far, or, you know, becomes a challenge on site, certainly.
A good example is we were involved a few years ago in an owner user group was looking at a site to build an industrial building, and they had a consultant involved that thought that the building should be preloaded, and which would have delayed, like, you know, preload maybe take a year, and they might have walked from buying that site had we not looked at it. We gave some advisory over, like, a different consultant to use, and they were like, no, this building doesn't need to be preloaded, and we're comfortable with the consultant, and the transaction went ahead. So just getting the right consultants and the right people and having the right relationships, like, and just like years of just know-how, you know, helps get things done.
Yeah, no, we see it all the time, like I said, on the brokerage side, where clients, in my opinion, engage guys like yourselves too late in the process, and the numbers may not have ended up how they thought. So we're really, really particular in trying to get groups involved with companies like Wells McLellan or other design build firms right from the start, just to make sure things pencil and make sure that actually ends up going in the direction they want. So it's a win-win for the client at the end of the day. Can you guys maybe talk a little bit too about the design build firm model? I know, maybe just painting it for listeners, say maybe years ago where it didn't feel like there was as many design for build firms as there are now, I would hire a contractor and I'd hire like an architect separately. And then sometimes I'd find myself trying to manage both of them and maybe trying to manage, you know, egos or challenges between the parties. How does a design build firm benefit versus maybe that maybe old archaic model of typical construction?
Darren, this has been a hot topic for us. Darren's ready to go on this.
Yeah. This wasn't, Corey, like you said before we logged on, this wasn't pre-scripted. So that question wasn't a preloaded one, but I'm glad you asked it.
I could hear you salivating through the microphone. You were so excited when I started asking that question. So I'll give you the runway to break it down for us. Go ahead.
No, it's just like my thing about this is, you know, design build is a term that gets thrown around a lot, right? And it's important, I think, for clients to really understand, like, what contract are they signing, or what am I hearing, and does this make sense? Does this pass the test? Is this what I really need, right? So a true design build, there's a particular contract form. I won't get into the nuances of that or the details of that, but, you know, a true design build is, we give you a price today, and it doesn't change until you get your keys at the end, right? And we take on all the risk from A to B in getting there, right? That's a true design build. And just to be totally upfront, we don't have too many of those contracts. We've got a pretty substantial HVAC retrofit project, actually, that's design build. And, you know, clients want design build because they want that cost certainty right up front, and they know the number's not going to change. But the challenge or the trouble with that is, and why we don't do as much true design build, is because of lots of these cost certainties and fluctuations and the time it takes to get through the municipal approval process. It's hard to give you a number today and say it's not going to change, you know, as we go through all that, and, you know, a year later. We can do that. It just means we're carrying that risk premium for that amount of time. Does that make sense? We feel, you know, it hasn't been making sense, which is why we've been sort of delivering so much of this stuff through construction management, where, you know, it's open book, it's transparent. You see where all the costs lie. You know where you stand. We identify the risk for you and say, look, this is what we see might be, you know, coming around the corner. We should carry this allowance for this, or we don't need to carry this because we, you know, we've we've crossed that risk off the list. And that way we're not carrying some big contingency because, you know, we don't want to come back for any change orders, right? And then at some point, once those risks are more well known or identified and you've got, you know, your prior tools or your DP in place, you know, we can look at fixing the number at that point and we do that together, right? So we've been doing that more on a contract delivery platform, but to our clients, it feels like a design build, right? We're still engaging all the consultants. We're still working through the process. We're still reporting into the client on what's going on with the project. And so it's, you know, we're running a project and managing all the consultants and the design and value engineering it like it's a design build. It's just who's holding the risk when, and when do we fix that number is the key difference. We're very happy to do design build. And we actually think like we were doing probably 60% design build, you know, 40% construction management or step some, I would say, you know, over 5 years ago. That's definitely reversed where the majority of our stuff is actually being done through construction management. But we actually think we are going to end up doing a lot more design build because the cost variability or the cost risk has come down. You know, we think certain municipalities are have improved their processes and are much more transparent and that risk is diminished. So we actually are a bit more bullish about design build because we think, again, that having that cost certainty up front, you know, helps our clients on their end, either, you know, with their financing or their pro formas. That was quite a long answer, but...
No, but I think it nails it down, right? Because I think a lot of people, I mean, I can, again, from a brokerage standpoint, one of the scary processes a lot of tenants and owner users go through on the leasing side, or if they're buying a strata lot, the development, or not the development, but it's the build out of the space. And sometimes you find clients struggle to see the vision, and other ones see the vision, get scared of the process. And we try to encourage them right up front to bring in a TI company or something to that effect to start helping with the vision, the costing, the process, the timing, just to kind of give them a lot more clarity. There's a lot of times we feel that, I mean, you may have a medical practitioner that's buying their own space that is scared, and you can't blame them because they're very busy individuals. This isn't their day-to-day business on the construction side, that are scared to have to take it from shell to turnkey. And that's where I feel like you guys and other companies like that can come in and be a really good value add to that process with these clients, and maybe more transactions get done over time because they got the ability for someone to walk them through step by step, which obviously you guys are doing. I guess as a final question here, guys, is I'd be really curious to get your take on the commercial real estate market as a whole from what you guys are seeing on the front end of the construction side for the balance of 2026. Where do we end up? Do we get busier? Are we stagnant? Do we pull back? Is it still driving forward? Where do we end up at the end of 2026 for commercial real estate wise?
I think on the industrial side, I think what we're going to see is large bay leasing activity probably come back first. I think that's probably going to be the first thing. So you're going to see like first snap, like, you know, multinational companies taking large blocks of space. There's good chunks of space on the market for either directly or for sublease. So that's probably going to drive the market. And once you start, I mean, industrial supply across Metro Vancouver is going to be like less than a million square feet, if it's not already, over the next few months. And I think once we get to the point where there's very, if it's going to take 6 months, maybe 12 months, people are going to see the writing on the wall that the market's going to get pretty tight. And that's probably going to drive people for leasing activity to pick up. On the strata side of things, like it's pretty much interest rate dependent. I mean, interest rates are pretty stable, maybe save for the last couple of weeks with the Iranian war that's been going on. So interest rates have spiked a little bit. So, you know, but at the same time, if you talk to people, like it seems like there's some strata deals that are getting done, and maybe hopefully the market normalizes really. So I think in terms of development, like there's a lot of, you know, there's torrent lands out there. There's First Nations land that we're probably going to see projects that are going to start moving ahead in terms of, at least on the planning side, and that's going to be an interesting dynamic for our market.
Yeah, I think Ben's spot on there. I would just add, like, I think the users are still out there. and it will still be user driven. I think there won't be a lot of spec building without, you know, some kind of pre-lease or at least that lease negotiation. You know, these lease negotiations take a long time, as you know, Corey, and, you know, converting the shell into a build to suit, like that's where we get heavily involved in, you know, what are the user requirements, whether they, you know, they've got a lot of automation going in there. They need a particular, you know, very low tolerance slab, for example. Like, so I think there's going to be more spec turned to build to suit to then get it to go into construction, you know, heading into next year, and still more users. Like there's lots of groups doing stuff. Like the doom and gloom out there is certainly a real sentiment, but there's lots of medium and small enterprises still doing a lot of stuff. And I think that that's going to continue to improve if some of this confidence, you know, business confidence goes ahead. But the fees, you know, the development fees and the uncertainty continue to put a chill on a lot of the developers. Like we're helping a group do some due diligence on a site right now. And, you know, the land cost has dropped, I'd say, you know, fairly significantly. Our hard costs are in a good place, but the municipal fees and the offsite servicing, you know, it just still doesn't pencil. So that's going to be a real challenge. Like what's going to relieve that pressure? I think that, you know, it's going to have to come from the land, you know, the land price, because it was driven so long by strata sales and it were returning to more of a lease market. Even if someone's, you know, buying it for themselves to do a build to suit, you know, they're going to charge themselves a reasonable lease rate. It's still not quite penciling the way it needs to be.
All good insight, guys. We appreciate you guys taking the time to join us today and kind of break down what you guys are seeing on the construction front of commercial real estate. But before we let you guys go, we got a six-pack of lighthearted questions, if you have a few more minutes for us. And because we got two of you guys, I'll bounce the questions back and forth, starting with Ben. Ben, first question up. A book recommendation for our listeners, and does not have to be commercial real estate, but it can.
Not doing a whole lot of reading these days because I have two young kids, but I did listen to an audio book recently. It's a bit of an old one. It's called Fooled by Randomness. It's written by Nazim Taleb, who's basically a statistician. It's about basically how people can be, the perceived idea of someone's skill can be perceived as skill, but it's actually luck. And a good example of it is, like, let's say you take 1 million people and you all flip coins, and you'd have one person maybe that would flip heads 10 times in a row, and you think that person was a genius, but in reality, it's just luck. So it's just sort of like, it's an interesting kind of book. It's almost like a Malcolm Gladwell kind of read, so I enjoyed that one.
All right, Darren, next question up for you. Favorite restaurant or bar? Anywhere, any city, lower mainland, could be on the island, could be somewhere overseas. Favorite restaurant and bar when you find the time?
Oh, man. Well, Elisa's always good. I was at Fable, actually, this week for a wine fest. I hadn't been there in Kitson. I forgot how much I loved Kitson, Westforth, and Fable was great. So I'd put that on my recommendation list.
Great choice. All right, Ben, next question up for you. If I were to grab your phone and log into your iTunes or your Spotify account, what would you be listening to right now?
Bassist the Soul.
That was quick. That was quick.
I've been listening to a lot of Rufus and Fred again. I'm on like a Fred again and Rufus camp right now.
Amazing. All right, Darren, over to you. You've had maybe a few too many drinks. You're sitting in a karaoke bar. Someone gives you a microphone. What song are you singing?
Oh, man. I've actually never done karaoke. So touch wood, that isn't going to happen to me anytime soon. I don't know what I choose. Probably some classic rock or something. Maybe some Tom Petty.
Anything by Tom Petty is good. All right, Ben, over to you here. I'm assuming we've got some hockey fans here on the call. We all kind of feel like we're in the industry. People kind of follow the hockey thing. Do Canucks get the first overall pick this year?
Well, it's about time. They've never had one, so.
Well, this is the year. But knowing our drafting history, even if we get it, we'll probably mess it up, I'm sure. We'll probably pick the wrong guy, so we'll see.
It's Frieder McKinnon, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that happens. You almost want to pick number two this year, I feel, where you got like you let someone else pick number one, and then you almost get what you've left over between the two of them. Versus if you pick one, you pick the wrong one, it'll be something that'll haunt the franchise for years. All right, Darren, next question over to you. Favorite vacation spot when you find the time?
I love Mexico, but we're off to Europe later this year, and I haven't been to mainland Europe in like 20 years, so I'm super stoked. So my heart's in Europe. So basically anywhere in Europe, France, I'll go with France.
Great choice. All right, guys. How can our listeners find out more about what you guys are doing over at Wells McClellan? How can they find out more about you guys individually and obviously Wells McClellan?
The best way to find us is we have a website, which is wellsmcclellan.com. You can find out more information there. You can find us on LinkedIn. There's a lot of information there, so it's probably the best example, or just give us a call.
Guys, thank you once again for joining us today. I really, really appreciate it and giving us some insight on what's happening in the commercial real estate, the construction side of the industry. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Corey. That was great.
We really appreciate what you guys do on the broker side. Yeah, we're always happy to help provide guidance to ourselves and clients.
Absolutely. We appreciate it, guys. And there you have it, folks. Our interview today with Ben Temple and Darren Sawyer of Wells McClellan. Great guys. Love having construction companies join us because we really get to find out what they're working on. And I was really taken back to hear that most of the projects, of the 20 projects that Darren sort of referenced there, were all owner users that were building stuff to spec versus he alludes to maybe it was 70-30 or 80-20 developers to owner years ago. Because as we all know, development, especially on the industrial side, small bay strata, mid bay strata was a booming industry for probably the past decade or so, has come to a little bit of a slowdown over the past couple of years here, much like a lot of the developing world has. But it's really good to hear how busy they are. TIs, owner users building. So really, really good to hear that stuff. We do talk about optimism in the industry. As I can echo, we are seeing tons of optimism on the commercial real estate side, on the tenant, buyer, and seller front. Lots of transactions happening. I'm not saying prices are really going up anytime soon, but transactions are happening. So it's good to hear that. And it's good to hear they're also seeing a lot of that on the construction side. Everyone's optimistic for this year. If things continue to progress in the direction that we are, be very hopeful we could sit here back at the end of 2026 and look back on the year and feel like we got back to kind of a more normal type of commercial real estate market from a transaction wise than maybe we've seen over the past couple of years. For anyone looking to do commercial real estate, they can reach out to us here at William Wright Commercial anytime at our website, williamwright.ca. You can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. Always love hearing from listeners. And you can always call our head office in Vancouver, 604-428-5255. So let us know what you're looking for, and we'll put you in touch with any agent, any of the offices throughout the province. Until next time, guys, thanks for listening. Take care.
Subscribe today.